The Short Game is listener-supported on Patreon. If you'd like to support the show and join us on our Discord, head to theshortgame.net or patreon.com/theshortgame.
Welcome back to The Short Game. This is a show about short video games, games that respect your time. I am Reagan Kelly, and I am joined this week by two excellent co-hosts.
Laura Nash.
And Shane Kelly.
And this week is a topic-based episode. As we have said a few times, we started in the last year doing these every now and then, roughly every month or two. This one, our topic for today, is the idea of gaming slumps. That is something that I think we're going to need to define for ourselves and each other before we really
how
get into
recognize
talking about it.
How to escape. I thought this was a posture-related topic.
I mean, as I immediately sit up straighter, this was inspired by someone at work saying, "Hi, I'm in a reading slump or a reading rut. Give me some fast, easy, can't put it down reads to kind of revitalize my interest." And that got me thinking of times when I've been playing the same game over and over again, or I have been playing just the same genre, or last minute procrastinating on games for the show because I am doing other things in my life. And I'm not really feeling like gaming is central, which is silly because I play so many games all the time that when I don't, it feels like something's gone wrong. So I'm just curious because, the cheap answer is have a gaming podcast that forces you to play new and interesting games and make your...
Constantly,
and then make your friends suggest games when you're in a rut. Be like, Reagan, you got to pick me a new game.
A slump is quite disruptive to this podcast because when we get into one, content gets a lot harder to roll out.
Oh, yeah. And
if any two of us are in a slump, oh boy, episode's delayed.
But I think we're good at getting each other out of slumps. And so I think it's worth talking about because we're pretty honest when we're getting tired or burned out on gaming. And we're very good at pulling each other out, but we've never talked about it.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think about this in a couple of ways because, like, I sort of have, like, my, you know, two different slump eras in my life.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Do they correspond to the birth of your children?
Okay.
Three slump eras.
the three kids plus. No, what I'm really referring to is, like, before starting the show, my slumps were one way. After starting the show, my slumps are a different way.
Mm.
I would actually have really long gaming slumps before this show. Like, kind of, I mean, we've talked many times sort of about, like, you know, our various, you know, our gaming history and whatnot. Shane's and mine kind of intersect in a lot of ways. But, like, I think back on, like, you know, when I would play versus not play video games at all. And there were whole stretches of time, you know, in high school or other, you know, periods where just I would not touch a video game for a long time. And often it wasn't because I didn't want to, but, like, in that era, in the sort of, like, pre-short game era, a gaming slump would usually look like, I want to play a game, but I don't know what I would enjoy, and picking a game is a big commitment, and, you know, big games cost a lot of money. Often back then, I didn't have the money.
You have to drive to GameStop
in order to buy
them. Yeah.
Oh, God, imagine driving to a place to get a game, and then you get there, and they don't have the one that you were thinking of, or you can't remember what the one that someone mentioned to you was called, or you can't find the magazine where it was mentioned, and you can't remember. And then, you know, you get a game and you play it and it doesn't immediately suck you in. And, well, I guess I'm not gaming for the next couple of months. So, like, that's sort of what gaming slumps looked like to me back then. Did you guys have, like, a similar experience with that back in the day? Or
yeah. I mean, the end of a console life cycle was but that was a period for, like, very deep, deep slump. Because, you know, you'd have some rumors coming out about, you know, there's going to be I don't know, the Wii U, it's going to be the hot new thing, and you're limping along with your Wii, and then you get to the point where there's like, well, you know, I don't know about this Wii U thing. I don't know what direction you're going in.
Your Wiimotes have like a quarter inch of dust built up on them, mm-hmm. and a little like silhouette of dust that they've left on the table because they haven't been moved in 6 months.
I remember having a long gaming slump that was very much related to the Sega Saturn. Like, we had gone deep into the Sega Genesis, and oh my god, this Sega Saturn thing looks so cool, and we got it, and like, there were like 6 games for it, and 2 of them were good, and we kind of gave up, and I think it was a long time before I was playing games on really anything for a while.
I can tell you exactly how long that slump was, because I'm pretty sure we got the Sega Saturn in Christmas of 1998, I think. Mm. Because we got it with they did the sort of like, I have to double check the year, they don't hold me to it, but there was a promotion that they did where you'd get 3 games with the Saturn if you bought it, and that was what pushed our parents to get it. And it came with Virtua Cop 2, Virtua Fighter,
Daytona USA,
and Daytona USA, yeah. And honestly, because it didn't come with light guns, the Virtua Cop was trash.
Yeah, Virtua Cop was booty.
And we only ever killed, you know, we only ever escalated into real life fist fights when we would try to play Virtua Fighter. And so we pretty much just only played Daytona USA on the thing. And I think we got a couple of other Saturn games. I remember we got Double Switch, which was
Knights.
Yeah, we got Knights eventually. We got that RPG Albert Odyssey, which we never finished. It's actually pretty good. But like, ultimately, we didn't get very many games for the Saturn. Really kind of fell off of it. And like, our gaming era ended until a good year after the PlayStation 2 was already out, and we managed to scrape together the money to buy one of those, which would have been, I think, around 2001. So that was a long gaming slump right there.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was mostly like, does the console continue to work? Because I inherited my brother's old Game Boy, and the type of the back battery case holder had broken, so it was being held with duct tape. So like, you moved it too hard and it would reset the game. So like, we weren't we got a new game and it was Pokemon. And we had only had my brother's Tetris, R-Type, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles until we got that 4th game. So when I say my gaming history was limited before the age of 20, I mean like emulators.
4 games.
4 games on the Game Boy. Emulators. And when my brother flunked a class in college, my parents took away his N64 and put it in the garage apartment. And we had to ask for the key to go play that. Upstairs, and the air conditioner would turn off after 30 minutes. So like, it was Texas heat and in a garage apartment that smelled like mold. But we were like, no, we're going to play this game. So
I'm going to go send your mom a sternly worded letter.
That's okay. They were doing it for my education, and I did almost get salutatorian. So like...
It was worth it, I'm sure.
No, it wasn't worth it, but like, it was a choice, and it, you know, we all make
I mean,
decisions.
I say all of this, and then like, I let my kid use her iPad for 2 hours a week, and she's probably gonna have similar complaints to me about this when she's older.
Yeah, dude, your kid gets as much iPad time in a week as mine does in a day.
I did nothing wrong in high school, and yet I had these weird rules around things. But anyway, so I didn't... The gaming slump would be I beat all the games I had, and then I had no more games. So the now I have the reverse gaming slump, which is I live in a land of plenty, and there are so many games before me that are in various itch bundles that I never played, or things I bought because I was going to be on the podcast, and then I got sick and never played them. I just have so many games in my backlog that when I have a couple hours free, the thought of looking through them sometimes is overwhelming, and I just watch TV instead. So it's mostly like choosing the game to play can sometimes be too big of a barrier. There's not like a Netflix or a randomizer pushing a game in my face. Again, you can solve this by having a podcast where your friends tell you must play a game by noon tomorrow. But often when I'm in a slump, it's because it's not because I don't have a lot of games to play. It's that I don't know what game I will like in this moment. And yeah. It's hard to find.
That's the tough thing these days, is you're absolutely spoiled for choice. You know, mm-hmm. there's a million games out there. For me, it's kind of a split between like lack of interest. I'll definitely have times where I am just less interested in gaming. I can't find something that's going to be fun for me.
Mm-hmm.
Or a lot of times now, it's also procrastination. Because mm-hmm. I have, Terra Nil that we just covered.
Yeah.
You know, I played a little bit of it with my kiddo. I'm glad you guys played a lot more of it than I did, because I procrastinated the hell out of that game. Sometimes my gaming slumps are now that I pick up something that's completely inappropriate for our podcast, and I get obsessed with it, and I don't really feel like playing anything else. I have had repeatedly throughout my life what I think of as the 2-week Minecraft phase, where I open up Minecraft and I find out that they've added some new blocks to it. And I'm like, well, let's see what color these new blocks are. And I blink and the time has flown. And I have a new world with a roller coaster built in it or something. And I don't know where the last, 3 weeks, 4 weeks have gone. Right now, if I am not covering podcast games, I really like the next game we're covering. But am I going to finish it? I almost guarantee you I will not, even though it is quite short, because I am constantly playing Helldivers right now. Helldivers 2 is fantastic. I know we've kind of talked about it on the show. It's not a game for this podcast. Our podcast audience is not going to care about Helldivers 2. It's a spacey, shooty, fun shooting game.
We did cover Helldivers 1 on this very podcast at one time. So.
We did.
But Shane, I think the real reason that we haven't covered Helldivers 2 on this podcast is that I didn't get into Helldivers. So.
Well, you've only tried it a couple of times.
I know you still want me to get into it, Shane. I know that you want me to get into it.
It's okay. I've got other people that will play Helldivers with me. I don't need to play it with you. But
you make me feel bad.
Yeah, it's all right. I'll shout out to Sandy, who's been on this show one time, who is playing a lot of Helldivers with me. There's a lot of it where it's like procrastination and like playing other things, getting sucked into stuff. I don't know if I really consider that a full-on gaming slump. The real gaming slump for me are those periods where I'm just lack of interest in gaming.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you have something that brings you a great deal of joy in your life and suddenly you're not finding any enjoyment in it, sometimes that's a symptom of something a little spicy.
You think?
But
I might have experienced this once or twice.
It does just happen in the context of hobbies and things like that. And there are some things that can pull me out of that kind of a slump. One of the things that really keeps me engaged with anything is community. That's why I think doing a podcast like this is great. But when it comes to broader gaming things, I will usually not get anywhere near as interested in or engaged with a game when it's not a game that has an online community of people who are writing about it, thinking about it, posting about it, sharing tips and tricks, discussing different strategies, fan theories on the the lore. I got way up my own butt on Destiny 2 lore at one point.
I remember you were sending me articles to read about how the worms had God or something.
Yeah, I find that really charming.
Yeah. So that will pull me out of a because there's one thing about gaming is like gaming is a very all encompassing activity. You know, your eyes, your ears, your hands are all have to be fully in it. But I sometimes just don't have the patience for that experience. But if it is a game that I can be thinking about outside of that context, or it gives me something to mull over or read about, mm-hmm. I really love that for pulling me out of that kind of a gaming slump. That's been me over and over again with Dungeons and Dragons. I love playing D&D, mostly I run D&D, but there's a concept that gets discussed in like D&D circles, and other stuff that's kind of adjacent to it, like, you know, Magic the Gathering and other things like that, called solitary fun, right? And these are social, engaged gaming activities where, you know, the amount of time you actually spend on the core activity can be pretty small comparatively. Like, sure, people will do marathon D&D sessions, but for a lot of gamers, that's maybe 4 hours a month, right? But there are all these ancillary activities where you could be thinking about it, talking about it, painting the little metal dude, all these different little connected activities that maybe work for different places where your mind might be. And for video games, a lot of that is there a forum or a subreddit, or is it active on Twitter? Is there a bunch of YouTubers making videos about this thing? Are there a bunch of fan theories that are being thrown around? And so that has that community, but you can do it, you know, in a solitary way. I don't know. Does that resonate for you guys on games you play?
For me, it's not the online community per se, although that has been a reason I've played Fall in London so long. But I think being able to play a game in a lot of different ways, or playing games that scratch different itches. It's kind of like when I am in a work slump, I will go do... Have I ever talked about my absolutely batshit way of organizing what I do at work every day before?
I don't think so.
I have... When I get overwhelmed, I'll draw...
I always enjoy the tiny windows into your batshit life. Thank you.
I draw a little four-quadrant map, like a little four... Draw two lines, and then the one side is things that don't take any thinking, and the other side are things that need a lot of thinking. And then one row is short and the other one is long. So there's four quadrants of like no time, no thought, no thought, lots of time, thinky short, thinky long. And then I'll put my stuff in those boxes. And when I have a long time in brain, I'll go to the one box and I just kind of dance around until the end of the week and the boxes
that
are empty.
That is so good.
And like sometimes I think I would do better if I had, like, I will not go into a gaming slump if I got a game for each of those quadrants.
That's a really
I will
good,
go into a gaming yeah. slump if all I have are long thinky games. I'm going to be sunk. Like, so I don't know what those rows and columns are for games, but that keeps me from like not spinning my wheels at work. Like I always have something I can do, even if I'm completely zonked out and have 5 minutes, I can just do one of my little tasks and feel like I've done something.
For me, I could make maybe one axis is an axis from reading to killing.
That's a pretty good one. Yeah. Like the chill to the violets. That's a good one.
And then the other axis could be like podcastable to non-podcastable. Uh-huh.
This is strange, isn't it? Because like what I was saying earlier, I have had these different eras of the way my slumps work, like the post short game slump. I'm not sure how relevant it is to the wider audience here, because like when I have slumps right now, it's because I can't make myself play the kinds of games that make sense for this show. And I think sometimes I have like this, Shane, you were talking about like how this is sort of, in fact, it's part of your, you know, just your ability to direct your attention. You know, I have some of this executive function issues, you know, I've diagnosed as a kid with ADHD. I don't know, you know, how diagnosable I am with that today. I'm not on anything for it or anything, but I feel like that's sort of like a part of the way my brain works. And a lot of my life is about like creating strategies to like manage my ability to pay attention to things. Mm-hmm. And video games are very much included in that. And part of the reason that short games appeal to me is that I don't have the attention span for lots of longer games. But that also means like I need to, you know, a game that requires like learning a complex system. Something like Terra Nil, for example, like we just did the episode on that. I had a hard time with that game. Part of it was because I had interface issues with it, but other parts of it, of my issues with that game, was just the fact that like I couldn't make myself sit down with my iPad and learn the mechanics of the game. They were just a little bit too complicated and a little bit too thinky, and my attention constantly went elsewhere. I was playing it on the same device that I scroll through social media on, for example, and so mm-hmm. I was instantly over there, or I was instantly like listening to a podcast, and then suddenly I realized I hadn't touched the game in 5 minutes. I was listening to the podcast, or, you know, other stuff like that. So games, I have to be very particular about like choosing games that we can cover on the show.
A whole thing. I need games in my life that will literally just give my eyes something to look at while I'm listening to a podcast or audiobook.
Mm. I have a hard time with that. I don't actually play, like I do it sometimes, but I don't actually play that many like quote unquote podcast games. Mm-hmm. You know, when I'm playing a game, I'm usually mostly in it. When I'm doing an audiobook, it's usually mostly because I'm doing something that I need to trick my brain into doing. Things like washing dishes.
Yeah.
Or I mean, it's a classic example, or sometimes certain parts of my job, you know, things where I need to I need to complete a task, but my brain says
something
no.
That requires no focus at all. Yeah.
Yeah. But video games, like I can't, even mostly wordless games, I have a hard time listening to a podcast while playing them because I'll lose track of the podcast or I'll lose track of the game. But yeah, I know I'm kind of a little bit unusual.
Yeah, no, I definitely have that space for it. Like if I'm just like relaxed, like Slice and Dice.
Yeah,
that's
perfect.
A perfect one for that. Or sometimes it'll be Puyo for me. Like there's
it depends on the
Puyo
podcast, of course.
Yeah. So yeah, but definitely that is actually a very surprisingly hard niche to fill because it has to be a game that has nearly no words and no important sounds and doesn't require that much quick reaction time. So that can be kind of a hard niche to fill.
Yeah, but that's an example of one of my, I guess, quadrants is that there are games that I will play to do a repetitive to play a game while I'm listening to something is a unique type of relaxing, and that's usually when I can't turn my brain off. I'm obsessing about something else.
Exactly.
I'm worried about work. I'm worried about something else in life. I have like displaced anxiety, and I need both my brain and my hands busy. And yes. Like I can't, a podcast alone won't fill it. I need to be doing both at once. So like sometimes when that is to me almost an alternative to a gaming slump when I don't have like a normal game, I almost feel bad playing an immersive game when I'm in a state like that because I feel like I'm doing it a disservice because I can't live in its world. I cannot fall in.
Laura, I don't know if this is a too personal question for a podcast, so you can call me up, but Reagan and I both ADHD diagnosed. Are you?
I've not been diagnosed. My mother has it. My brother has it. It is hereditary. I almost have hyper focus as a like I almost tune out too much stuff. Mm-hmm. I get hyper focused, and I think that's because I had so many people in my life with ADHD that I like counter programmed. Like I literally like went into my closet and like read books in the behind the clothes. I like tunneled away and was like, this is my world and I'm not gonna leave this for 4 hours. So I hyper focus on stuff. I will rabbit hole like no one's business. So it's not as bad. It's good in some ways. Like I don't get distracted easily, but it's almost worse when I can't get out of the moods I'm in. So like if I'm in that mood, it's not changing for the next 3 hours. And sometimes if I have a game that everyone's like, this is such a beautiful narrative and I cried and I'm like, oh, cool. I have anxiety right now. I'm going to not be in that. I can't like change moods that quickly. So that's not super personal. It's more like how you play a game, and I'll have to do something like watch a different piece of media or read something to like shift. Like, I have to externally shift my mood so I can play a narrative game. And that sometimes that's when I'm like, I'm not going to get through the game tonight. I'm not going to start it for an hour because I'm not in a mood to play. Like, sometimes games deserve, I think, me to come to them with my best self. And sometimes when I'm coming off a bad work day, I'm going to play the game and hate it. So I need an hour to, like, shift, transition, like, eat some dinner, and then I can play the game and enjoy it. But I not having ADHD means I can't quickly, I won't meet the game on its terms for about an hour.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to be thinking about that for a little bit now, because this is not the subject of this episode, but now I'm starting to think gaming and ADHD is a topic episode that has some potential to it.
At times I've been like, I think everyone has some of it, but like I do not have it because I know what it looks like from being around it so much. Yep. I almost went too much in the other direction, for sure.
It's interesting. I think when I am in a slump, I think you mentioned about, like, you know, doing a different type of media and coming back to it. I've been trying to do more of that recently because I've recognized that one of the problems that I have when I get into this state where I'm like, I don't want to play anything, but I also want to play something. Like, you know, gaming is like probably my number one hobby, my like main way to unwind in an evening or, you know, to enjoy some time off. And when I, you know, get in a state where I feel like I can't do it, what I often do, what the slump often looks like, is like me just sort of like scrolling through my Steam library and like booting things up for like a minute, or even worse, turning on something like my Mister, which is my, like, you know, it's a, we've talked about it before, emulation basically thing, like a thing. It's got literally every game released on dozens of consoles at my fingertips, and then just scrolling through lists, like not even opening them, just scrolling the lists. And by the time I've like scrolled halfway through the list of every game ever released for the PlayStation, then I'm like, I'm out of time, or I've like disgusted myself, and I just go and do nothing. I just use my phone for a while or something completely unedifying, uninteresting, and like, you know, unpleasurable. So I've been trying to do more of just like, well, okay, I'm not in a gaming mood right now. I'm going to watch a television show. And like, that sounds so obvious, but it's also just not what I've generally done to get out of these kind of slumps in the past.
No, you tend to just sort of pick up a soldering iron in moments.
I do.
Like that.
I do. You do.
I'm holding up. I just reshelled my Dreamcast. And then I also, like, what have I soldered in the last 5 days?
Reagan, how many devices that are in the room with you right now have you spent more time disassembling and assembling than using?
Almost literally everything I own. Like, like, that's very true. And it's a good hobby to have. Like, I was actually going to say this when Shane was talking a little bit about like the outside, you know, tangential parts of a hobby, like, you know, being into Destiny and enjoying, like, you know, reading Destiny lore and talking on Destiny forums and all of that. And for me, like, part of gaming is retro gaming. And for me, like, the retro gaming thing, like, so much more of it is that outside part of the enjoyment of retro gaming. I do enjoy playing old games, but like, I spend so much more time, you know, reading about the latest developments in ROM hacks and, you know, HDMI mods for consoles and things like that. And just like following the general scene of the, like, the tech and enthusiast side of the retro gaming hobby, than I do actually playing those games. And also things like, you know, buying little mod kits and installing them and things like that. That's something that I really enjoy doing. You know, I just spent a little while like modding my my GameCube, which I talked about, and everyone was like super bored last episode. But I did that, and I had a lot of fun with it. I played some games on the Dreamcast. I've been playing with that a lot this week. But like, honestly, if I'm honest with myself, the number one thing that I wish about that, I was like, wow, I wish the modding part had taken longer and the gaming part had taken less time. Like, it was it's like only 5 wires to solder. Like, where's the beef, man? Like, I really enjoy that stuff, and it is sort of tangential to the hobby in a way. And I've just, you know, I've come to realize, like, that's the part of it that I enjoy.
I mean, I had a theory in college that the more effort you had to put in before the party, the better the party was. Like a, generally a costume party, a theme party, a toga party, a party that was in the winter and it was cold outside and it was snowing. Like the more effort you put into getting to the party, the more invested you were in getting it good. And I think that sometimes with gaming, it's the same thing that you put a little, you put a lot of effort into getting it just right or getting it all ready. That's not always true.
It's way more fun to play on a game on a PC that you spent 15 hours building than it is to spend the same amount of time gaming on a console that you bought.
For some people, that's not true for me.
Okay, well. Now we know a little bit more about the difference between
But I think that's that's the case with some of my other hobbies. Like I will spend hours and hours and hours looking at something with that will get me 10% better experience in a hobby. Probably more like one. I'm rounding up to 10 because it makes it sound better. But I will spend 30 hours researching something that's going to just marginally make my life better in a hobby. And that's part of the fun. Like... Mm-hmm. I think, and that's something I do sometimes when I'm in a slump is I will procrastinate by doing everything but game. Mm-hmm. I'll make spreadsheets for the podcast and I will research on like all the best games of the year and I will not play them. I will just do research on them. All of that's like productive procrastination, mm-hmm. but it's still procrastination. Again, luckily if I don't have a good reason not to be in the podcast for several weeks, except I didn't feel like it. My friends will be like, hey, you okay? So that also helps.
Yeah, I can kind of tell sometimes when you guys are in a gaming slump, you know, because like mm-hmm. I'll be like
you'll be messaging and no one's replying.
Yeah, you know, we've got a private Slack channel. Slack channel. We haven't used Slack since like 2018 or something. Discord channel. We've got a private Discord channel for
you
the hosts.
You can say Slack, it's less embarrassing.
I don't know. Is it though? Where we kind of just like plan the show. We talk about, you know, the sort of the behind the scenes stuff, the like the little messages of like, hey, is anybody having, you know, anybody played this? Can we record Thursday night? That kind of thing. And sometimes I'll just post in there like, hey, I'm really enjoying this game. I can't wait to play it. I can't wait to talk about it with you guys on Thursday. And then crickets. And I'm like, somebody's having a slump. Maybe mm-hmm. everybody but me is having a slump. And that's fine. And part of I think the way this podcast like works is that like if one of us is having a slump, you know, people skip weeks. I skip weeks sometimes. Everybody does. And it can be, you know, a general life slump thing, or it could be like this game isn't working for me and I just don't really feel like playing it enough to talk about it kind of thing. And that's all good. But what has happened is that like it's really shortened my slumps because this game, you know, we've got a new game every week. It's like, well, you know, I'm going to slump this week. Well, I'll try again next week. That's definitely not the way that things used to be for me.
There's also an easier time here of picking like a very different type of game. So if I can't do thinky games, I can usually be like, hey, there's a little puzzle game I've been playing. It's 45 minutes. Let's all cover it. And everyone's kind of excited. So I think the variety here helps me. But I honestly, to go back to something Shane said earlier, like having a community that you can just say, hey, I'm stuck. Going back to the original prompt of my friend at work asking people at work for game for book recommendations, mm-hmm. like I think we've been able to ask other folks for, hey, I don't have the brain energy, mental stamina. I just don't know. I'm disinterested for some reason. Mm-hmm. Help me. And people are really willing to reach out. And that's been great.
Yeah. Staying up to date on like what are the good, interesting, potentially short indie games coming out right now or that have come out lately is a surprisingly difficult thing. Like, you know, I listen to other podcasts, I follow different websites, but even then, like, I can't do that all the time. It would be a full-time job. And so having a community where we can just be like, eh, what should we do? Mm-hmm. And then we, you know, people chime in the Discord. That is a huge plus. I mean, I know folks listening to this show, you know, you may have, maybe you're one of our patrons, maybe you're in our community, maybe you're already helping us or we're helping you with your gaming slumps, but if not, if you're hearing this voice and you're looking for a solution to your own gaming slump, having a community that you're playing games with is absolutely the number one.
Yeah. Find some new gaming buddies.
Yeah. And I know that's a big lift sometimes, like finding gaming friends. Like that's why there's so many people out there like looking for people to play D&D with and, you know, maybe not finding them or, you know, whatever, you know, make new friends. That's a really easy thing to go out and accomplish as an adult. Right. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know, joining a Discord server where people are talking about the kind of games that you like and, you know, making a games club channel or something, you know, like that's mm-hmm. the kind of thing that you can pretty easily do most of the time. And it doesn't have to be some, like, in fact, it probably is better if it's not some massive server or massive community where you're just going to be one chat. Small person, you know, find that weird, small, gaming community niche that you fit into a little bit where you can be a part of a smaller, more tight knit kind of community. And maybe the Short Game Discord is that for you. We would always love to have folks come join. You know, I know there is that barrier to entry that it's something for our patrons. You know, I still would invite you. It's not a huge investment. Come check it out. That's having specifically you guys, the show, and as a larger extension of that, our community of people on Discord. It's the main thing that helps me kind of like shake it off when I'm kind of feeling stuck in that way.
I have a few kind of wrapping up thoughts mm-hmm. that I haven't fully addressed head on here. I did kind of sidelong address the fact that maybe if you are not enjoying something that has always brought you great joy, that could be something to maybe look a little deeper into in terms Very of, fair. You know, there's a symptom of depression that's anhedonia. That's when, you know, is there anything else you love that you're not getting joy out of right now? But there are some things that I feel like, to a greater or lesser extent, I have encountered in my life with gaming that are not just about gaming. And one is addiction. Like, there is a lot of debate over whether gaming addiction is a real thing. But in some cases, I do feel like people have set their life and themselves up in a way where gaming has become something unhealthy for them. Mm. You know, whether it is that you feel a social pressure to always be online and available for your WoW guild, whether it is that, you know, you are pulling a slot machine that, you know, spits out cartoon waifus. There's a lot of different places that, you know, we have a podcast that's about fitting gaming into your life. Sometimes it can do that in a way that's not fully beneficial to your life. There's also, I feel like, a lot of people who take gaming and make that part of their self-identification. I have, at different times in my life, even though gaming is a big part of my life, I have more or to a greater or lesser extent self-identified as a gamer, right? For people who fully embrace their gamer identity, it can be challenging to your own identity to find that you're not enjoying gaming, right? And so mm-hmm. you might push yourself in a way that is, going to cause you some real personal stress. And so if you're looking at your own life and any of these things are resonating for you, that's definitely something to talk about with a friend. Really consider, games ain't that critical. You can always try to take a little break, walk away from them for a little while. Find if you're in with a group of gaming friends that are not adding to your life, look elsewhere. You know, if you are, maybe not enjoying the games that you're playing, take a break, set yourself some time limits, try changing your relationship with something if it's not fitting into your life in a way that feels healthy.
But make sure you listen to this podcast every week.
Yes.
But Shane, that is absolutely needed to be said and also really, really well put. I've had that sort of thought sometimes, and part of it is like, you know, when you've even if you're not the sort of person who's just like decided that you are a capital G gamer and that's your identity, it can also still just feel weird when you're not enjoying the thing that is your main hobby. Because, you know, so what am I going to go do? Read a book? What am I, an animal? Like, it
buy can a be, fishing be, rod?
No. Yeah, it can be difficult to be in a situation where you're, you know, you're something about your life or your brain chemistry or whatever has changed, and you're finding that you're not enjoying the things that you used to enjoy. But some of that is just like take it as an opportunity, try to find some other way to spend your time for a while. Gaming will mm-hmm. still be there. Like, FOMO exists, but it's also kind of not real, right? Like, FOMO is a, you know, there's no reason that somebody can't drift away from and then back to gaming, and you will not have mm-hmm. missed out on anything critical. Gaming is, it's just a hobby like anything else. You can come back to it.
If your favorite franchise has released a real dud and it's really hurting your soul, try reading a book under a tree.
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah.
Or play some short games.
Listen to a podcast.
Yeah.
Change your habits.
I hope some part of all of this is an interesting conversation to have. Thank you, Laura. Cause like, I don't know. I wouldn't have thought of this as a topic, but like, we had a lot to say, it seemed like. And I'm glad to have chatted about it a little bit. But we do seem to have a little bit of time left here at the end of the episode. So apart from gaming, or maybe inclusive of gaming, I don't know, whatever. Does anybody have anything that's been making you happy this week?
Well, I've been on vacation for a week, so it'd be very easy to be like, "We'll go to a tropical island." But I think a rabbit hole that's been bringing me joy as I've been back in cold New York has been looking at beautiful playing card decks online. I'm not a playing card deck collector. I have a couple. I have maybe four or five cards from artists that I like, but it is really inspiring to look at. You know, you can search like best card decks of 2020 or something, and just watch people put these artist made creations out, and it's just really mesmerizing. You're going to want to buy a lot of them. The base of this was that we played a lot of euchre with my now brother-in-law. Congratulations. I was there for a wedding. I wanted to give a deck that had some tropical elements to him as a like wedding gift. So I was looking for that, but I just got completely time sucked into. There are playing card decks for books, for pagan gods, for tiki. There's a whole series of ones made after old vintage tobacco company branding. You can basically find playing card decks of anything. They're basically artist go wild, and they almost always cost under $40 unless you're paying for gold gilt. I haven't bought any because I haven't. I luckily have a specific thing I'm looking for, which is a tropical or beachy themed deck. So I'm lucky that I've seen probably hundreds of decks I would love to own and have in my hands that didn't fit the prompt. This is a dangerous path if you like pretty things.
I stared into that particular abyss myself because at one point I ordered something from a website that this was actually when we ordered the Miu Minis. You remember? Those are the same shape as a deck of cards. And so at the time, there wasn't like a good case for it, but you could get a card deck case. And I ordered one from a website that markets towards magicians.
Theory 11, probably?
No, it was a different one. I don't remember it now. But yeah. I ordered this thing and they sent in the box a bunch of like just onesie twosie cards from card decks to try to get you to, you know, buy. And it sent me on a similar kind of thing. I went looking at a whole bunch of different playing card decks and I managed to like avoid becoming that guy. But like that was, I was like, this is something that I could end up collecting where I would spend all my money on it. Mm-hmm. I better not.
The most dangerous deck to me right now for people who are like, ooh, what is she talking about? King's Wild Project Arthurian deck is a Arthurian Legends deck in the style of the Book of Kells, and they're gold and they're so pretty. And the deck, the tuck box, when you pull it out, the sword unfurls and is a whole full Excalibur, and it's only $13. And I'm like, but I know that the second I buy this one $13 card deck, I'm going to buy 30.
I want to show you something that I did buy recently. Hang on.
Please do. The one pretty playing card deck I did use as table numbers at my wedding. So I have reused the one expensive nice card deck I bought.
That is pretty. Here, I have one handy here because this is actually, like, I liked it so much I've kept it in the case with my Miyu Mini. This is a single card from a deck of, you might not be able to see it, of cards with sparrows drawn in the style of Japanese illustration.
It's gorgeous.
So this is the back, and this is a jacket. It's just all sparrows drawn like, you know, in a sort of a vaguely Japanese print style. And they're so pretty. I almost bought this deck, but then I decided not to. It's probably out now. But yeah.
Yeah, and so the reason this is so soothing is because the videos for these are just like 6 minutes of showing every card in a card deck, and there's something just very mesmerizing about that. Go ahead, Shane.
This is a tarot deck. I love a tarot deck, and you can see it's got a lovely box. This is from a Houstonian local artist, although I think he actually has moved out of Houston, named Dakota Cates, who does art under the name Wizard of Barge, and just does this sort of kind of cartoonish, childish, disgusting fantasy art. And I'll just flip through a few of these. You can see the card back here is a spooky eye, and in this set the suits are beasts, curses, cults, and swords. Just some really fantastic.
The art is fantastic and neon. It's that like black neon with bright colors, blue.
Weird, gross, goopy, drippy, dead goblins, freaks, demons, cultists. Just fantastic stuff. So love Dakota Cates. Love the t-shirts from Wizard of Barge. If you need good t-shirts or you need good dumbass bumper stickers, you know, can't recommend Wizard of Barge enough. Definitely. I've been bitten by that bug of wanting to have a cute deck of cards.
Well, I will very quickly share, because there's not much to share about it, but I will say the one thing that's been making me happy this week is I just finished watching the Amazon TV adaptation of Fallout.
Ooh.
And it was great. I really liked it. It's super weird to see, like, you know, they straight up just took the Fallout universe. I mean, I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said 100 times. If you've read a good review of the show, I'll just simply co-sign it. It was a good show. But, like, what was most interesting to me about it, sort of, was that, like, it really maintains the tone, visual style, and sort of general vibe of the Fallout games. And it really, really maintains the lore of the Fallout games, which is not something you usually see with adaptations at all. It just, like, there were a bunch of articles on, you know, gaming enthusiast websites like Polygon and stuff, where folks were picking nits about, like, specifics about the timeline, about, like, how this fits in between or after some of the events of some of the Fallout games. But it's like, you don't understand, man. This is a game that, like, takes most of the events of the Fallout games as, like, fact and just extend. It just tells another story in the exact same world without directly contradicting or trying to, like, reimagine or retell anything. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty rare. And yet it totally manages to nail just being a good show. My wife and I watched it together. She doesn't know the first thing about Fallout, has never played any of the games. I'm not a huge Fallout fan. I played Fallout 3. I've played a little bit of New Vegas. That's about it. I've never played 4. I've never played the original 2. But, I enjoyed it more for having that little background in lore, but not that much more. My wife had a good time with it, too. And, man, Walton Goggins is perfect in it. He's just such a...
I really can't wait to watch this.
He's great. He's really, really weird.
Yeah, and the person they have playing the vault dweller, I think named Lucy, is the same one who played the one of the girls on Yellow Jackets.
Oh,
yeah, the one who, okay. I can't spoil Yellow Jackets for people, but
You can just say one of the girls on Yellow Jackets. It's okay.
One of the girls on Yellow Jackets who has one of the many terrible fates of one of the girls on Yellow Jackets. I can't remember her name, unfortunately. But yeah, she's a real interesting looking person.
She has the biggest eyes in Hollywood. Yeah. She's like almost the level of like Battle Angel Alita eyes.
Not,
like she's got
not
like
quite the biggest eyes in Hollywood. I feel like they're that she's duking it out with
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Exactly who I was thinking.
Yes.
Of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can, they, I bet they both have really good stereoscopic vision.
Yeah.
They're probably like, they like have no problem like figuring out what's in those like magic eye pictures.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Jane, what is making you happy this week?
You know, I'm really having a hard time coming up with something. I have had a kind of a busy week without a lot of time for leisure. I will in lieu of something that's making me happy, I'll share a story that was making me embarrassed but also happy.
Cool.
So, go for it. Story.
All right.
So one of the things that has been making me very, very happy lately has been how I've been getting my son to and from school, which we are fortunate enough to live very, very close to the school where he's going to kindergarten. And I really love riding my bike. I live in kind of the east end of Houston. Houston is a really not bike-friendly city. It's one of the least bike-friendly cities in the world. But if you live really centrally in the city, it actually somehow opens up and becomes quite bike-friendly, especially with a lot of changes that they've made over the course of just the last like, couple of years. So, wonderfully, our route to school, we've started taking our bikes, right? We get up in the morning and ride, you know, him on his little teeny tiny kid's bike and me on my bike, and we ride down to the school. And at the school, they have a bike parking area that has parking for more than 30 bikes, and I've never seen another bicycle there ever. We got a bike lock up the bike. In the afternoon, I'll either go back or Julia will go and she'll head down, walk over to the school. And there are usually after school kids playing on the playground and a lot of them like riding those little kiddie scooters, or now some of them are on bikes too. Their parents are bringing the bike in the back of the SUV though. So I'm not, anyway, the freedom of this is really nice, but I think he took it a little bit too far. Because the other day I was waiting for him and his mom to get home from school, and in he walks as usual, takes off his helmet, and says to me, I bet you're wondering where my mom is. And I said, oh, what? Really? Where is she? And he said, well, I got here before she did. She and I was like, she's coming after you. You're and he was like, yeah. And like, so I got him a snack and sat him down and we were kind of chit chatting. I was like, wow, you mean you biked home by yourself? Now I'm thinking like he biked home quote unquote by himself. Like sometimes he gets a little far ahead of mom because he's a little faster than she is while she's walking. And he's like all proud about it. And I was like, wow, yeah, you're really, really showing some independence there, buddy. And then I get a phone call from mom and she says, Shane, I can't find him.
Oh my God.
Me and all the moms, we've looked everywhere here at the park. He had saddled up his bicycle and biked the entire way home without telling anyone he was leaving. And
I'm sorry. Oh no.
She was terrified. It was probably really only about 5 minutes. A very short bike ride. There are no major streets. He was not in danger. But we both felt like the worst parents because she had wrangled all the other moms on the playground to look for the missing kid. And, you know, and then I see all these parents every day because, you know, me and the other neighborhood parents always run into each other on the way to and from school. So now we're a little embarrassed. I have not let him bike back to school since then. I think we'll maybe do it again next week. We've had a lot of conversations about various dangers and the importance of adult supervision for kindergartners. So, you know, that's making me happy because I'm like, wow, he actually did impress me. He's a little more independent than I realized. But it's also making me a little bit terrified.
My kid starts kindergarten soon, and I mean, there's no chance of this happening, but she's going to be riding the school bus, mm-hmm. and I am terrified about that. So, Well, life stuff. Thank you for listening to The Short Game. This is a show about short video games and also whatever all of that was. You can find our show on the internet at shortgame.fm. And that's where we've got all the links and buttons. You can find links to all of our socials. Our show is on Mastodon and Blue Sky. Although I haven't figured out how to do auto-posting to Blue Sky. Does anyone know how to get a WordPress to auto-post to Blue Sky? If you do, let me know. We do on Mastodon. On Blue Sky, I should be doing it more manually, but I am simply not because I can't be bothered and it takes time. And who has time? But what is time? But we're on those. And you can also find me on both of those, as well as everybody else's social links are on shortgame.fm. You can also find there a link to our Patreon. We've said it many times on this podcast, but this show is made possible by our patrons in so many ways. Obviously, some money from the patrons helps us keep the servers on and keep the show working and helps us just with all sorts of little aspects of the show. But more important than that, having a community like we talked about on this episode is huge. And if you'd like to be a part of that community, we would love to have you. It's so good having people to talk to about the games that you enjoy. And maybe listening to this show, you'd like a community like that. Well, if you go to the shortgame.fm or patreon.com/theshortgame, you can join our patron community, and you'll get instant access to our Discord, where we talk about the shows, talk about the upcoming shows, we talk about the games that we're playing, we talk about not short games, we talk about other stuff. Lately, we had a channel on there where we were talking about video games in Spanish to practice. I'd like to go back on there and do more of that. I've started Duolingo recently, so all sorts of different stuff in our community there. We'd love to have you. I've been Reagan Kelly.
Laura Nash.
And Shane Kelly.
And thank you once again for joining us on this episode of The Short Game.